Now, my guest today is Siobhan Pierce, and Siobhan has had an eventful life, I can tell you. She's been a children's entertainer, worked in the corporate world. She's now a writer and poet and public speaker. That's going some, I think you'll agree. So first off, I have to ask, how on earth did you become a children's entertainer in the first place, Siobhan? And I forgot to say welcome to Phoenix FM as well.
Thank you very much. Well, I became a children's entertainer out of desperation. I had at the time twin boys who were age four, and the day of their party was fast approaching, and I had no idea how to entertain 15 four-year-old boys. And so I came up with the idea of entertaining them myself, and hence I became a children's entertainer called Dolly Daydream.
And how did you start all that?
Well, I started it by entertaining my own children. And then after the party, which actually went quite well, some of the mums came up to me and said, well, would you do that for my child? So I said, yes. And then another mum came and said, well, would you do that for my son? So I said, yes. And I found out I was doing a lot of free parties, so I decided to launch myself as a professional children's entertainer.
But you went out and got some props for this, did you not?
So I did. So I actually started off going to my local joke shop right. and having a go at some of the tricks.
Yeah.
And I found out I was really bad at the tricks.
Bit like Tommy Cooper.
Very much like Tommy Cooper. I actually pinched the idea from Tommy Cooper. And so I became a female version of Tommy Cooper.
Right.
And the idea was that Dolly Daydream was in a daydream, and hence she got all her tricks wrong.
Right.
And that hopefully would make the children laugh.
And it obviously did.
And it did make the children laugh. Yeah. All the tricks went wrong. I had a friend who lent me her clown costume.
Yeah.
And I found my piece de resistance, which was Ernie the Emu, in my local charity shop. So Ernie the Emu was really the cousin of Rod Hull's emu, if people remember Rod Hull and his very naughty emu. Well, Ernie, I say, is his cousin. And he was a little bit naughty with Dolly Daydream. He used to put a custard pie in her face at the end of the act.
Now, when you talk about Dolly Daydream, are you talking about yourself or the puppet that you got called Dolly Daydream as well?
So, no, myself, I am Dolly Daydream.
Right.
And I had a whole outfit, which was the image and the character of Dolly Daydream.
Yeah.
I've got various puppets. My star puppet is Ernie the Emu, but there are
right.
others. I have a bear. I used to have a frog. So there were lots of different other puppets. And at one point, I had a little sort of doll puppet called Daisy Daydream.
Right.
So I went through sort of various different puppets and various different props in my life as Dolly Daydream.
Now, one of the things that we have to do here is to write up a show page after the programme. And one of the things that we have is pictures, etc. And I tried to look for something like Dolly Daydream online and I got some very strange results.
I'm sure you did.
Now, how long did you keep this children's entertaining business for, and how many families did you entertain?
Oh gosh, well I did it for 5 years full on, and then after that I started to taper off a bit. I thoroughly enjoyed it, but it was hard work.
Yeah.
Particularly around Christmas time, where sometimes I'd be doing three parties a day. And I don't know how many families I entertained. A lot.
And did you notice much difference in the behaviour of the kids and their parents from different housing estates, etc., compared with more affluent families? Because I imagine you ran into a whole mix of people.
Yes, I did. And you're absolutely right. They ranged from families living in tiny one-bedroom flats on council or social housing estates, ranging to families who were very affluent and had big houses in the country. And the main difference I found was that the children of the poorer families were more appreciative of Dolly Daydream because they didn't get many treats.
Yeah.
The children from affluent families were great, but they had a lot of treats. And the second thing I really noticed was that the children from the poorer families, often the mums and dads would stay to watch Dolly Daydream and become involved in the whole party.
Yeah.
The children who came from the more affluent families, often their parents didn't really have time to be involved in the party. They were busy people. So they were the main two differences that I found.
Now, as you say, your sons at the time were around about four when you started this.
That's right.
But obviously they got older. So how did they react to you continuing to do this by the time they... Cool. I mean, you said that you've been doing it about 5 years. By the time they reached about nine, how did that go down?
They were not impressed and they were very embarrassed by Dolly Daydream. And they used to think that I was very sad and still do.
I can't believe it.
And I think it really stems from the time where, unfortunately, I was running a little bit late to pick them up from the school run.
Yeah.
And I arrived to pick them up from school dressed as Dolly Daydream in full costume and full makeup. They say they've never got over it and they've had to therapy ever since.
I can understand it. So that is what persuaded you to leave the world of children's entertainment. And you moved on to what corporate business, I believe?
So I worked predominantly for housing associations. I was what was first of all called a supported housing manager.
Yeah.
So providing accommodation for vulnerable people. And I had big teams of people, big teams of staff that I was responsible for, and a lot of residents that I was responsible for as well.
And how easily did you make the transition?
It was a struggle at first. It felt very strange going to work dressed in normal clothes rather than a clown outfit. And it did take me a while. I found the adult world to be very serious. I was used to humour.
Yeah.
I was used to children having fun. And suddenly I had to be responsible, I had to be serious, I had to write reports.
I love doing that.
And I had to go to a lot of meetings, some of which were incredibly dull.
I fell asleep during one. Now, anyone who's ever been involved in the corporate world will know only too well that circumstances can change overnight if the money dries up. And did this happen to you? And if so, how did you cope with it?
It did, particularly in 2008, when there was the crash. At the time, my sons were at university, and I obviously was keen to get another job as soon as possible. So it was a big shock, and it was a worrying time because it was a very expensive time.
Sure. So what happened?
So basically, what happened was the housing association that I worked for at the time said that they had one job going. They were going to make me redundant, but there was one job going that nobody else really wanted.
Uh-oh. Didn't that raise alarm bells?
It did, but I was quite desperate.
Yeah.
I became what's called a project manager.
They always give it a super name.
It had a very posh name.
Yeah.
And basically, it was working in Basildon on the Vange estate.
Yeah.
And the project that they wanted me to oversee was the regeneration, as they called it, of the drains.
So wonderful.
There I was in the middle of Basildon in February, located in a site hut, overseeing the drains, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
You didn't fall down the drain.
I didn't, no.
Now, having recently retired, all that's behind you, and instead you've moved on to speaking. You're a writer, a poet, and you're also involved with Essex Gardens and Trust. So a pretty full life, eh?
It is, yeah. Yeah, I thought when I retired I was going to put my feet up, but life has a way of...
Yeah.
Presenting different opportunities. I've always been interested in writing. I've always done a lot of writing professionally.
Yeah.
And when I retired, it's brilliant to be able to write things that I like writing about. So I'm an avid gardener.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to become writer in residence for Essex Gardens Trust.
Yeah.
So I do that as a volunteer. I'm also a speaker, so I write my speeches.
Yeah.
And I also write poetry and short stories.
Now, the books and the short stories, what sort of stories do you write? Are they thrillers or what?
No, they tend to be ones that have some sort of dilemma. I'm very interested in, I think my background in social housing is in social justice. So they tend to have a sort of a twist that at the end will have a social justice theme to it.
And the poems, now I think you just told me earlier on that you'd just done your first sort of live poetry meeting. How did that go and where was it?
Plucked up my courage to perform at the Hot Box in Chelmsford, where they have a poetry open mic session. So I performed three of my poems there last week. But the type of poetry I write is a full range, ranging from sort of pamers to political rants to poetry about gardens. So I've got quite an eclectic mix of poetry going on.
And will you do the poetry reading again?
I will, yes, yes. I did enjoy it and it gave me confidence.
Yes.
It's quite a difficult thing to do because you're actually standing there and performing as yourself and you're performing your own writing as yourself. So all you poets out there who do performance poetry, hats off to you for your bravery.
Well, look, Siobhan, thank you very much indeed for coming and talking to us today. But I have to ask you if you've got any pearls of wisdom to impart to anyone else struggling to find their feet when times are hard, as they often are.
I think taking opportunities is really important, but also transferable skills. Who'd have thought that the skills that you learn as a clown, which are predominantly humour, patience, resilience, focus, would be the same skills that you would use in the corporate world. And that's a lesson that I learnt, that actually those skills stay with you and you can use them in all walks of life and lots of different jobs in life as well.
Great stuff. Well, all power to your elbow. And I say thank you very much indeed for coming in and talk to us.